Box, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Every now and then, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this time, we watched Mimi's Request, which was Beautiful Boy. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
As always, it is Samuel.
It's John!
Oh, that was so loud in the mic. And,
it's
of
John,
course, we have Mimi here.
Hello. It's Mimi.
So, I don't think any of us, except for you, had actually seen this before. So, how did you, I guess, find this or get exposed to this? If that's okay to ask about.
Yeah, well, I thought my friends who didn't show up would enjoy this. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
So, Tyler, Colton, I hope you're listening, because that was about you.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. Okay, so I heard about this movie due to my brother Jared. He is an addict, recovered addict. And so, and he's actually the person that helped me out of my own addiction. So he's like, I watched this movie. I know that you're going to love it. And so we watched it together. I forgot what year this movie came out.
2018.
Okay, so I think I was, at that time, I was at their house a lot. So I've lived with them before. So basically we had this wonderful night where it was me and him, and we both watched it. He's in the recliner, and he's this big, bald, beefy guy, and then there's me, and I'm on the couch, and we're both just like sobbing through this movie together, just like, and it was great. And so I got it introduced from him because I think this speaks to the story of addiction really, really well. So we both just loved it.
Well, I had heard of this for a long time and kept meaning to watch it, because I'd only ever heard good things from all of my, you know, my fellow, like, actor friends who love this movie and kept telling me that I needed to watch it, and that it was really, like, everyone was like, it's so sad. Like, get ready for the sad. And I think that's kind of why I probably put it off a little bit. It's just because it's hard to just be like, I'm going into something sad and I'm excited about it, you know? It's kind of hard to do that. Unless it's, like, Bly Manor or something. But, like, you know, I've been wanting to watch this for forever, and I love Steve Carell when he does dramatic roles. I love him any time he's acting, but his dramatic roles are so good, and so I was very, very excited about it. But what about you guys?
I had never heard of this movie before Mimi. Literally, the first time I ever heard of this movie is when I pulled it out of the box.
Well, I remember the confusion in your voice was, like, Beautiful Boy? Like, so yeah. Confused.
The first time I'd ever heard of this movie, and there you have it.
Okay.
I mean, same boat, really. I didn't hear the movie until where it was like, this is the Banter Box pick for the week. I was like, cool, never heard of it. I saw Steve Carell was in it, and I was excited to see him, because it's always fun seeing, you know, usually stereotypically very comedic actors put on very serious portrayals, because it just shows the amount of talent they have and that they're not just, you know, for practical jokes and kicks, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they did such an incredible job. But
now that you mention it, because I think I know exactly who you were thinking of, the other person, I mean, this kind of was a very Robin Williams-esque performance.
Very,
from Steve Carell.
Very Robin Williams, very Good Will Hunting kind of vibes for sure. Yeah. That's interesting, because when he was saying it, I was thinking of Robin Williams as well. Yeah. Like we said, this movie came out in 2018. It was directed by, I'm going to butcher his last name, Felix Van Groningen? Maybe that was him. It was also written by him and Luke Davies, based on the books, or the memoirs, Beautiful Boy by David Sheff and Tweak by Nick Sheff, and stars Steve Carell as David Sheff and Timothy Chalamet as Nick Sheff. You can pretty much just watch this on Prime Video, since this was an Amazon-created movie.
For some reason, the internet tells you it's on HBO Max.
It is not on HBO Max.
I don't know why it tells you
this,
that.
Yeah. This is a first movie I couldn't just pull up and, like, rent off of YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazon, since this is an Amazon original, it was like, nope, only Amazon, which was very interesting. So the IMDb summary for this says, based on the best-selling pair of memoirs from father and son, David and Nick Sheff, Beautiful Boy chronicles the heartbreaking and inspiring experience of survival, relapse, and recovery in a family coping with addiction over many years. Samuel.
All right, so I got a couple interesting tidbits. We will start out with the writer and the director of the film. The director, Felix Van Groeningen, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
These are his movies. Y'all tell me if y'all have heard of any of them. I've heard of none of them.
Okay.
With Friends Like These, The Misfortunates, The Broken Circle Breakdown, and The Eight Mountains.
I have not heard of any of those.
Not a single one.
That's fascinating.
Our writer is actually mostly a novelist who has written a couple of screenplays. And he loves his one-word screenplays. He wrote the screenplay for Candy, for Life, and for Lion. Lion was nominated for an Academy Award.
Well, Candy, this was a fun fact that I didn't write down, but Candy was actually essentially his screenplay version of his own memoir about his own addiction journey, Luke Davies. And so, you know, then he wrote the screenplay and like helped it kind of come to life. So that's what that is. And that's, I'm assuming, why he was put on this project, is because he has done this before and had a very similar journey.
And then one last little tidbit about the writer of the book and the subject of the movie, Nick Sheff, who wrote Tweet Growing Up on Methamphetamines. He is a writer for 13 Reasons Why.
Wow. Okay. Which I was not expecting that.
Would not have seen coming.
Yeah. I was not expecting that. That's interesting.
He's a very good book.
Tweak is?
Yeah, it's worth a read.
Yeah.
For sure.
I believe you, yeah.
No, he's a writer and producer.
I've heard of Tweak. Yeah, I just haven't actually read it. Yeah, so very, like, indie kind of across the board from everybody. Yeah, so does anybody have, like, sort of broad strokes things they want to talk about before we sort of dive into the plot summary here? The only thing that I will go ahead and say is we've already, you know, kind of blanket statement in the summary and everything talked about, like, what the subject matter of this is, which is very heavily and realistically focusing in on addiction to heavy drugs and, like, what that does to your brain, your body, your family, the people around you. So, you know, I'm just going to kind of put out, like, not even like a trigger warning, but just like a content warning. Be aware that we're going to be talking about that a lot. And so, you know, if that's something that is sensitive, I just wanted to go ahead and put that out there before we start going through the plot and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me, so it's interesting going into a movie like this because it's an area that, it's not that I'm purposely sheltered or anything like that from it, but it's an area that I don't have really much life experience in.
I mean, me neither,
I have extended family who's gone through stuff, but nobody who I've been close with has ever gone through anything like this. So it's very interesting watching it almost as an outsider and getting the view on it. And then I guess my other kind of overarching thought about it before we dive into the plot and the details and all is just the amazing acting from everyone.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Here's my hot take, which is that Steve Carell did a great job. He did a fantastic job. I went in expecting him, when I saw it was a drama with Steve Carell, expecting him to be the person who blew me away. This was actually the first Timothée Chalamet movie I've ever seen.
Same, actually.
And he impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah.
He was the best performance in the film.
Well, to be fair, Steve Carell's role was also much more understated. And I think that was kind of, you know, purposeful. Yes. And so, of course, you know, like, Timothée Chalamet is going to be, like, the standout just because he has more to do in the sense of more,
I guess
more,
where I would counter, like, with that is that we get so much more time with Steve Carell and it so much more focuses in on him. But it's also kind of getting in the weeds because they were both amazing. So.
Yeah, I was completely unbothered by Steve Carell's performance.
I'm not saying I was.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you were
hinting
at.
No. I was not saying it was. I was saying it was an incredible performance, but I went in expecting him to be the star of the show, and then to me it was Timothée Chalamet. Which was...
Yeah.
All I was saying was it was surprising. Yeah. I am not talking crap about Steve Carell's performance in this movie. Let the record show.
Someone's getting very defensive over there.
Yeah, because I'm getting accused of saying things I didn't say.
If you, I would say this is a very sexy movie, but Call Me By Your Name is the next Timothée Chalamet movie you need to watch.
I've heard of that one.
It is very good. It's the first one I ever saw him in, and it is, I think it's a book. I'm like 99% sure it was a book first.
Maybe.
But it's a story about, like, it's a gay love story, and like a, you know, it's so good. I can't go on, it's so good.
Yeah, I've heard of that, but yeah, I realized as well, I don't think I've seen him in anything else. Yeah.
I've seen clips of him from, I think it was a Netflix movie or show he did, the one about the Battle of Agincourt, yeah.
I think probably King then.
Medieval.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
The King. I think
just because that's a battle that I'm, like, obsessed with, so I was all like, oh, I'm not going to watch the whole movie, and but Dune. I will watch this full battle scene.
Yeah, Dune's good, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I just loved really everybody's acting in this, which when we get to the reviews, I'll talk about it because it was very interesting. But, yeah, I mean, this is told in such a way to where... We have reviewed past movies on this podcast where timelines have bounced around and where there's been, you know, sort of like confusion of what timeline are we in and, you know, like, where are we in the narrative? And this did such a good job of never making me wonder at what point in time is this thing happening? Is this the past? Is this the present? Is this the present but a little... like in the past, and so it's Timothée Chalamet and not is it Jack Dylan Grazer, is that yeah. But it did such a good job because at no point was I sitting there like a little confused. Even when it would cut from one thing with Timothée Chalamet to another, I knew if it was past or present, and I can't even tell you how they did it. They just did a really good job of never having me get kind of like lost anywhere. John is nodding, which tells me that he agrees. But yeah, that was something I had wanted to talk about because even while watching it, I was like, normally with movies like these, I get really kind of lost in the sauce. And I'm like, I don't know where we are. But this was so well done. And I couldn't even tell you how they did it, but they just did a really good job with it. And apparently this movie was recut like 18 times. Like, wow. They had it filmed and it took them like 7 months to edit just because they kept... not being happy with the final, like, with the final order of everything and, like, where all of the shots went. And they finally had to get, like, a different editor who had worked with the director before to come out and work on it because he just threw his hands up and he was like, I don't know how to fix it. Like, come out here and fix it, please. And then it was great. But, yeah, it was just really fascinating. But, yes, John?
No, I think overall the... yes, the major motif or subject of the matter is, you know, obviously addiction and, you know, drug abuse. But I think this movie also covers the sub-motifs really well as well as... It's not just... This movie can still hit home in a different aspect other than just the drug abuse. You know, it can hit well in the factor of, you know, parental expectation. Because you can see Timothée Chalamet's character really struggle with, you know, like... what's the precedent for my family? What kind of pressure does that put on a kid growing up? Or, you know, a split household, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very... If you sit there, it's like, oh, this movie may not resonate with me for XYZ reason because I never had that issue. It resonates in other factors.
Yeah.
It really is worth a watch. And, fun side note, because I don't know if y'all recognized it or not, but did y'all recognize who the featured doctor was?
Yes,
of course.
Yes, of course we did. The dad from Hill House.
His voice came on. His voice like came out of the speakers, and I immediately started tapping Danielle.
And I was like, "Why are you tapping me?" And then it cut to his face, and like it was such a serious moment in the movie, but I just beamed, and I was like, "Oh, he's here!" Like,
so I just rewatched Hill House over the weekend, and I was like. I was just happy to see him. He's just such a good actor.
Yes, he is fabulous. And, like, so much of, like, Office cast members being in this movie. Both of his you know, his new wife and his ex-wife were both cast members on The Office. Of course, Steve Carell. I kept just waiting for more to show up throughout the movie. I was like, all right, we got one. Oh, there's another. oh, Holly's here. Okay, who else is here? Like, who's gonna come out?
What's we got?
I would say the only blanket statement I would like to say over this is that if you are newly sober, do not watch this movie. I think it's there. You see a lot of the drug use in the movie, which can be very triggering to want to use. And also a lot of the scenes that they show of like him being high, they do a really good job where like you feel like you're in the room. Like, even from the perspective of the shots, how mm-hmm. it's done, it's almost like you're literally in the room with them. And so, I just, if you're newly sober, you gotta wait. I think, yeah. Because even though, like, I've been sober a long time, sometimes in certain things, when I see people just do certain things, or they're in this headspace, or they're watching being high and stuff, I'm like, good times, you know? But I'm like, but also I'm like, no, no, not good times, you know? But if you're new, I would say don't watch it.
Yeah, good call. Okay, well, let's dive into the plot here. So, New York Times writer David Sheff's teenage son, Nick Sheff, goes missing, reappearing in their home 2 days later. Seeing obvious signs of drug use, David takes Nick to a rehab clinic. Progress is made, and Nick transfers to a halfway house with the agreement of Nick's doctors. Days later, Nick disappears, and David finds him in the streets. So, I want to talk about... Here's what I really loved throughout the movie, and like, you know, I'm addressing it here because I noticed it right off at the very beginning, is the journey that David Sheff takes throughout all of this. Like, at the very beginning, you see just infinite patience and forgiveness, and like, you know, Nick would say things to him that were, you know, that were cruel or were brutal. And instead of going off or getting upset, David would just go, okay. And just like, you know, and quietly kind of get up and leave the room. And that would be what would cause Nick to be like, I'm sorry, you know, because he knew that what he did was wrong and it didn't immediately get backlash. And so he doesn't get that retribution of, well, you yelled at me too. It's just he has to now sit with this thing that he has said. And I told Samuel, and I'm curious if you'll agree with me on this, John, because you've met my dad. David Sheff is so my dad in the way that Steve Carell portrays him that the whole time I was just like, well, now I know what would happen if any of us ever developed an addiction. This would be what would happen is that's my dad.
He's going to do coke to try to see what it's like.
Well, the thing is, my dad, like, you know, not in like any sort of like heavy way, but he did, you know, smoke cigarettes and like, you know, and dip and everything when he was younger. And so he has dealt with that kind of addiction, not the heavy type by any means. But he has told me even now that he quit dipping and smoking, I think, when I was a couple years old, and he still struggles. Like, even now, he'll go to parties where, you know, a ton of their friends all smoke, and he still has to sit there and just be like, no, like, don't do it.
It's so...
Not even once. And so, like, that story, as well as, you know, my mom always telling us, like, horror stories about, like, growing up in a house, like, full of cigarette smoke, we never had any desire to try that. But, yeah, I mean, watching just his incredible patience and all of that gradually be, like, chipped away at by just, like, not even necessarily one giant thing. It was, like, thing after thing. You know, Karen saying things to him like you, like where he's just like, I have to help him. And she's like, you can't. And having to like accept that was just like, that was honestly probably like, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself, but that was probably my favorite part of the movie, was just watching him like, you know, go through that process. And then of course we see him at the end and everything. But it was just, I was obsessed with it. It was so, so good. So well done. And, you know, and that's why I didn't buck up, but that's why I was a little like, Samuel, do not shame Steve Carell because he did such a good job.
I wasn't.
I get what you're saying.
Good night, everyone.
Samuel just leaves. But yes, and that was one of the moments that I just fell in love with, was him going out and just searching the city until he just finds him in the rain. And I just loved it. John, what were you trying to say?
No, I was just saying, There's a particular moment, I'll get to it later, because, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But there's a moment in particular where just Steve Carell's acting just... It shattered me. It shattered me. We'll get to it in a minute. But chef's kiss all around. Chef's kiss.
Yes. Well, back at the rehab facility, Nick reveals that he has been taking numerous drugs, including crystal meth. Nick eventually completes his rehab program, and seeing his improvements, combined with wishful thinking, David allows him to go away to college on his own to become a writer. Nick's newfound freedom and sobriety start well as he becomes a good student and starts a relationship with his classmate, Julia. During a happy family dinner at his girlfriend's parents' house, Nick finds a bottle of pills in their medicine cabinet and swallows one. After this incident, he slowly relapses, causing Julia to break up with him, and his substance use to escalate until he eventually purchases heroin. I have to talk about... Were you about to say something, Mimi?
Nope.
Okay. I have to talk about the way that was done so subtly, and the way that they didn't have to dwell on the fact that, like, that he, you know... He took the pill. It started to, like, amp that side of him up again. We didn't even have to see a breakup scene. They showed, like, a short shot of them facing each other in his dorm room and her clearly, like, upset and bothered. And then we just see him alone, you know, like, because then it cuts to him alone using again, right?
Yeah, because he's
yeah, and so, like... I was just so obsessed with that because it was so, like, quick and understated, but it completely gets the point across of, like, okay, you know, he started his relapse. Whether the breakup was caused over the relapse or over something different, they broke up, and now he is, you know, he's dealing with these problems again. I just, I love when a movie knows exactly what it needs to show instead of just dwelling on something for the sake of screen time. And it's like, no, we don't need more. We can, the audience is, we don't have to spoon feed them. They know now, all right, the relationship is done. Don't have to dwell on it anymore, and it's over. That was just something, like, artistically that I really liked. Around this time, beginning to become suspicious of his slowly changing behavior, David decides to read Nick's diary. To his horror, Nick has filled half the pages by colorfully describing his growing addictions through worrying words and disturbing cartoons. On one of the last pages, Nick writes of his difficulty obtaining meth in college, but that he managed to score some heroin, which the thing that, like, got me and kind of got me for the rest of the movie was specifically the line that said, it filled a part of me that I never had before, and so I tell people what they want to hear. And I was just like, oh, to read that in your, you know, in your kid's journal when you have had faith that they've been moving forward and that they're trying to leave it behind, and, like, seeing the honesty of just, no, I'm not going to leave it behind. In fact, I'm, like, I'm just going to lie so that I can keep doing it, is just such, like, you know, obviously I'm not a parent, but I can imagine that is probably the most hopeless situation that a parent could be in, is knowing that their kid is trapped in something that, you know, they need help to get out of, but because they're so attached to it in such an unhealthy way that they just refuse to, and that they're not even being honest about it anymore. That was just something that got me in that. But returning home, David senses that Nick is, that Nick is using again, and Nick leaves of his own accord, feeling claustrophobic from his dad's suspicions about his drug use. David and Nick,
which was just the classic, I think most kids have had this scene with their parents, where, you know, your parents accuse you of something that you are 100% doing, and you're like, how dare you?
And you get super upset.
Yep.
And you make it all about the fact that you don't trust me.
Yep.
Instead of the fact that, but you did it, though. I mean, you're right
not to trust me, but yeah, I can't believe you don't trust me.
I can't believe you don't have faith in me.
You've done this.
Like, that is the classic, you know, every time the kid is guilty of anything move is, how dare you not trust me?
Yep.
Like, this is an outrage, and in our house, like, you know, it's absurd. But, I mean, ugh, God, yeah.
That reminded me of, in the very first, one of the very first scenes, that I think I literally said something very similar to my parents at one point when I was forced to go to counseling. And when he gets out of the car and Timothée Chalamet says, I'm doing this for you.
Mm-hmm.
As he's walking into the rehab facility, the first one.
Yep.
I was like, oh, pretty sure I told my parents that after I OD'd, and I was like, it had to go to counseling. And so just the subtle manipulations that his character does the entire time to make his parents kind of like do the dance because they're, you know, codependent upon their child. Yeah, it was beautiful. Really, really well done.
Well, and it's such a, like, it's good, like, you know, it's good writing in the sense that, you know, we have this moment of him clearly not wanting to go, not taking it super seriously, and then he's just like, all right, but it's only because of you. And, you know, from what I assume, and you can tell me if this is the case, if you're basing your recovery on somebody else, it's never going to happen the way that it should, right?
No, it won't work. You'll relapse. It has to be because you want out.
Yeah. Period. And that moment, it's like, you know, I don't know in that moment what David Sheff was actually, like, thinking. I'm assuming that was based on, at the very least, a real conversation that happened. But if he realized in that moment, yeah, it has to be for you, it can't be for me. Or if it was kind of a, okay, you know, if that motivates him to go, then, you know, that's okay. But, yeah, I mean, that's such a fantastic moment. I'm glad you brought it up. But, yeah, so David and Nick finally meet up, and Nick asks his dad for money so he can go to New York. Knowing the money will almost certainly go towards drugs, David declines and Nick angrily leaves. That scene was phenomenal from both of them. That scene specifically. He acted it. That was probably my favorite acting that I saw from Timothée Chalamet in the whole movie. Was that scene where he's like essentially pretending to be sober and like he's not gonna just use it for that and like he's gonna go to New York and everything and just like asking for the money over and over and over and over. Watching someone act high acting sober and doing it well is so impressive.
Here's the thing. We don't know. For all we know, Timothée Chalamet actually got
high. I hope he didn't. I hope that's not real. I hope that's not real. I hope he's not a method actor. Please don't do that. So unsafe. No! John! No. Hitting us.
I think John just found out what he would rename this movie.
No!
Oh my goodness.
No! Oh my god. But no, that was one of my favorite just scenes between the two of them in the whole movie. And it also just, you know, it breaks your heart when at the end Nick is angry and he's leaving and David is just like, but we can still talk. Like, sit here and talk. Like, you know, like, just talk to me about what's going on. And Nick's like, no. And just, like, leaves. And it's, again, just that infinite patience that he still has at that point, that he hasn't lost quite yet. But you start to see kind of like the cracks form in it a little bit. It's so well done. David later gets a call from a New York hospital saying Nick has overdosed. David flies there to retrieve him, and after talking to his ex-wife and Nick's mother, Vicky, he decides Nick should be sent to live with her in Los Angeles. Nick has a fresh start in Los Angeles. He attends 12-step meetings, spends time with his sponsor Spencer, and even works at a drug clinic to help newer patients overcome their addiction. 14 months sober, Nick drives to visit David and his family. Seeing Nick back to his old self, interacting happily with his two younger half-siblings, David is proud of his son's newfound sobriety, as is his wife Karen. As he departs from their home, however, Nick has a sudden surge of depression, resents his sobriety, and fears relapsing. Spencer gives Nick moral support over the phone, but to little avail. Later that night...
I feel like they also made it pretty clear that... I mean, even as mm-hmm. he's hanging up on him, Spencer's like, no. Like, he knows exactly what's about to happen.
Yep. Because, I mean, I feel like... And Mimi, again, you could tell me if this is true, but I feel like you can hear it in somebody's voice, because, you know, Nick is saying all of the things you need to say, or all the words to say, which is, you know, yeah, I'll come to dinner with you guys. That sounds great. I'll be there. But Spencer can hear the tone that it's absolutely a lie. And especially since Spencer is his sponsor, he's also a recovered addict, most likely. So he knows the, like, language of when are you telling me the truth and when are you lying to me so that you can go and do something you shouldn't. So he doesn't even need to, like, question him. He doesn't even need to go, are you actually going to come? He knows he's not. And like you said, he's like over the phone. Don't hang up. And then he's gone.
One thing I've said before is like when you become an addict, you also become a lot of other things. You become a liar and you become a thief. Like, it's not just you're an addict. It's all the subtext. And so when you're a sponsor for someone, like, you can hear that they're trying to manipulate you because you were a manipulator. Mm. And you were a liar. And so I think we become really good at manipulating those around us. And so you can just tell when... You can't bullshit a...
That's okay.
Oh, you can't BS a BS 100%. But get a sponsor. Sponsors are awesome. So...
Well, yeah, I mean, that scene also, I mean, you know, I'm curious if it's okay to ask about, but, like, having, like, those happy moments, like, him going home to see his family and his half-siblings, and then the immediate kind of, like, crash of depression, is that, like, an actual thing?
I'm ready for this. Okay, so I have two things written down, if I can read them, that...
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to say it a very specific way because I was trying to, like, get my thoughts about this. Addiction for me, it was an escape. It was a haze over the too much of my existence. And I craved the numbness and the dumbing down of me. It was like the world went to black and white and was just how I liked it. So, I'm going to pause there because I think this is a... I don't know why it is this way, necessarily. So I think other people will understand. After a really good time, or something like that, really happy, and it's kind of like you're in this, like, other world, or after a really big high of, like, just natural, like, life is good, and everything's, you know, this, I don't know, fairy tale kind of dream. You can have these big crashes, because then you go back to the mundane of, you know, you just had this, like, emotional high or whatever. But also when he talks about just the, there's one point where he talks about the everyday, just being like, we just have to do the same thing again tomorrow. And like all the monotony of life. Oh, I was like, dude, because like you get, I don't know, it's the droning on of the same that I feel like it makes you want to just. Put the haze over. I don't know how to explain it. Other than that, just like numbing everything because it's almost like you're overstimulated but not stimulated enough with life of you're like, if I have to do the dishes one more time because tomorrow it's going to be the same. Like, so yeah. You want to get that kind of high. But, and then I wrote, caring for someone with addiction is like Stockholm Syndrome. You're a hostage who has developed affection for your captor and their pet monster. They could abuse you, torture you, even threaten to kill you, and still you remain steadfast in your loyalty. Every moment is heaven or hell. Every day is ecstasy or paralyzing fear in a storm of paranoia. That's the best way I could put it. So, like, both is, like, being, like, David, you're constantly in this state of just, is it gonna be today?
Mm-hmm.
Is it gonna be, I'm gonna get a phone call? Is it, I'm gonna get a text? Am I gonna show up and that person's passed away? And are they gonna get sober? Is it, like, it could be years down the road and you're, like, you're still, like, are they gonna relapse?
Yeah.
There's never this moment of coming down off of that, like, hypervigilance. And so, that's basically the best way I could explain it, but... Again, there's codependency and all that, but absolutely, I still struggle with a lot of these things where I'm just like, you know, it'd be nice just dialing everything back just a little bit because of what I liked, but other people might want to turn that dial up.
Yeah.
You know, like with what Nick shows, you know, a lot of that stuff turns the world into technicolor.
Yeah.
And some people, it's like, just depends, but 100%. It was so well done. I just, I can't. So, yeah.
Yes, so later that night, Nick drives into San Francisco where he runs into Lauren, a fellow drug addict from his past, and confesses his desire to party, despite having been clean for quite some time. Lauren, I actually know from, like, a few different things. She's been... She was in the sitcom Last Man Standing. She was in Booksmart. Booksmart is a movie I haven't actually, like, seen, but I need to see it because it's very good. But she's done a bunch of stuff, so when she popped up, I was like, all right, like, okay. Because I really like her as an actor, and she did a very good job with this. But the two buy various drugs in the streets, which they proceed to inject together at Lauren's place where they have sex. When he learns Nick has gone missing again, David prepares to look for him, but Karen protests that he has done everything he can for Nick and he cannot do anything to fix his addiction, which David heartbrokenly accepts. One day, Nick and Lauren break into the home while David and his family are not there and retrieve some valuable items. The family come home and the two quickly depart. At first, they go undetected, but David's other son, Jasper, notices Nick, and both David and Karen go to find them. Karen chases them in their car, but stops and lets them drive off. Lauren overdoses, but is revived by Nick and is sent to the hospital. Nick tearfully calls David and asks for permission to come home, which his father declines. Nick continues to plead, but David hangs up and breaks down in tears. Despairing, Nick overdoses, but he survives. David and Vicky visit him in the hospital, and David and Nick tearfully embrace. Closing titles reveal Nick has been sober for 8 years, and it would not have been possible without the love and support of his family and friends. And that was Beautiful Boy. The soft clapping so as not to make the mic peak. No, Samuel!
What have you done?
I added it. It'll be fine.
Well, the one scene that that was kind of, like, that wasn't really mentioned in the summary was what I would call the one quote-unquote, like, comedically light scene, which was when David tried the cocaine, just like because he took for anyone who hasn't seen the movie but is, you know, is listening to this, he finds a girl who is hooked on the same or at least similar things as Nick is, takes her to dinner to talk about her experience, and she says it's like a cocaine high but like 1,000,000,000 times better. So him being, you know, wanting to be able to empathize with his son, gets some for himself and tries it. And, you know, it's not like super, like, you know, slapstick comedy by any means, but it adds a brief moment of levity to an otherwise, like, you know, very heavy movie where he is, he just doesn't know what to do with himself, really, while he's experiencing it. And it was very interesting to me because for a moment I got really scared that the story was going to be that David also fell to addiction along with his son. And I was like, oh no, I hope that's not the story we're telling. Oh no. And so when it didn't come back, I was like, okay, okay. We're like, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Of course, I don't know, like, their whole lives. So I don't know if, you know, potentially that was a little thing, but That was a scene I appreciated, again, because while I don't think my dad would do that, it is very much the kind of thing that I could see somebody like him doing. And it again shows just the unending love and patience and being like, there has to be, like, you know, I have to know. That's why he goes to the guy and is like, what am I up against? Is he has to know what this is and what it feels like so that he can actually empathize with his son. But of course he doesn't want to actually do the full thing. So he's like, this is the closest I'm going to get. And this should give me just like the idea, which is just really incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe we also, during his high, this is where we get that really long drawn out letter from his dad, I believe, right?
No, he writes that later. Cause I think he's writing it for an article.
Because he starts feverishly typing during his high.
Well, during his high, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought he was very slowly typing. Because he goes up and he's like click, 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 click on the computer. We only see it a little bit. Maybe I've like misread it, but it didn't seem like he was typing fast. It seemed like it had like somehow slowed him down, which is interesting because that's not what I thought cocaine did, but I've also never done it, so I don't know.
I think he was kept hearing the button that like you pressed the wrong dun, dun, and so it was like, I think he was like couldn't really see the keys correctly.
Oh, that to type. Yep, that's fair. What was the what's the letter you're referencing? Why am
the
I
letter
forgetting
when,
that?
When Timothée Chalamet is in the house stealing when Nick goes back and robs them and he's in the office and he finds the
yes.
3-page letter that I think the idea was is that Nick or is that David had wrote it for like potentially even to go in a paper.
Potentially,
because that's kind of how it was phrased. It was to Nick, but it was almost, especially if you look at the first page, it was almost phrased more like, you know, an open letter about what I've been going.
Because all we really get as far as like we get a close up on like the third page, which is very much like not a direct address, but like an indirect address of like, where's my beautiful son I once knew? Tell him I miss him.
Yeah. Which ugh, that last sentence, just tell him I miss him. And, like, it was so subtle, again, with Timothée Chalamet's, like, performance of that little moment of him, like, registering the letter and almost just, like, putting a wall up where, like, he sees it. You see it register and, like, start to take effect, but he just puts up a wall and he's like, all right, moving on, and just, like, keeps going. And, oh, that was so hard. That was hard to watch. But yeah, that was Beautiful Boy, guys. I don't know if I want us to rename this unless anyone really has like something that they think is better.
I have not been able to come up with anything.
I can't either. I don't know if either of y'all were able to.
Nothing that's better than Beautiful Boy. I mean, I have my quippy titles as usual, but I mean,
I don't think we need no. No, we do not need a quippy title for this movie.
No, it works for action films and comedies, but I think Beautiful Boy will
Breaking
be just fine.
Sad.
Oh my God, Samuel! Oh my God!
I mean,
Breaking
it
Sad.
Worked.
Breaking Sad.
Oh my God. I don't know if you had thought of one, potentially.
The title's perfect.
I mean, it is.
Yeah, you can't do any better than that.
I don't know. Breaking Sad's up there.
False.
No. You can't do that.
Oh. But one thing I did want to say was about like his dad and like trying to understand part is 100%. What a lot of parents do where they try to rationalize addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So he goes to the experts, he reads all the books, he even does drugs to try to science it away. And low-key, that's probably what my parents did. Hey, Mom, Dad. because it's so irrational.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I can't tell you how many times it's like people are just like, just stop. Just stop, you know, and you're like, that's not how any of this works. I thought that was a really good way of like, they really do show all the steps that like parents go through because it you know, I had my own addiction story, but I also was a caretaker, for an addict who was way worse, than me with alcohol and drugs and pornography. So kind of hit all the big ones, but I was in the room with, there was like me, and then it's all parents, because most spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends are nowhere to be found at the point where they're in a rehab for a long period of time. So I got to see firsthand like parents, and like a lot of them are codependent. I 100% was codependent. But watching them walk through, and a lot of times they're 20 plus years in with the kid and they're still there, like them, they're still there. It's that unconditional love, like they never give up, and it's just how you go through the phases to where you get to where you're like, I am no longer in control. I'm not in control.
Yeah.
The only person I'm in control of is me, but it takes parents, I feel like, even longer to get to that point because it's your baby, you know, and so you're like, I can't ever give up, and so it takes a lot longer. So I got like firsthand witness to like that, which was really like an honor, honestly. But I feel like the parents almost have it worse in a lot of ways than the actual addict because it's just so awful on that side too.
Well, because being able to, I mean, I assume it's just the feeling of like helplessness, you know, that like you can be there and you can talk with them and you can, you know, help in the ways that you can help from the outside, but there is no getting in there and fighting it for them. There is no, you know, like that, it, like, it's not possible. Like, the person has to, as you said earlier, fight it for themselves. Like, you know, they have to. And so, you know, I imagine that a parent being in there and just having to watch their kid continue to, like, relapse and then try to recover again and then relapse and try to recover again and things like that is just the one of the more, like, one of the more perfect definitions of just like hell is watching your kid suffer and not literally not be able to do a single thing about it. So something I wanted to talk about was, so obviously, you know, went on Amazon and the general consensus by viewers is great. 80% of the viewers rated it 5 stars. But something that was interesting was the amount of people really like disliking like either the way it was written or the semi-disjointed nature, which I liked, or even the performances. Like there were a lot of people not even just haters being like, oh, you know, this movie sucks. Like, you know, it was people like specifically saying like, yeah, I thought this was great. This was terrible, and I disagreed with pretty much everybody. But
in terms of the editing, my thought process on it, you know, and the kind of disjointed nature of it, what it felt like to me is it felt like in when it was showing the periods of life where Nick was sober, it was very straightforward,
mm-hmm.
and very clear and not disjointed at all. And then yeah, in the times where he was going through heavy drug use, it was a little chaotic. So I thought it was very purposeful.
Well, and I thought so too, yeah. Which is why I really liked kind of the disjointed purposeful
and,
nature.
And very thematic. Like, it yeah. wasn't disjointed just, like...
Just to be disjointed,
right,
you know?
It was a very, like, thematic way it was edited.
Yeah.
Very, very intentional. So I didn't have an issue with that.
Yeah, I didn't either. But I do have, you know, I have a positive and then I have a negative. So I'm curious what y'all want to hear first.
Negative.
Okay. Well, we don't get this person's name. It was an anonymous person, and they just titled it... They didn't give it 1 star, but they titled it A Missed Opportunity. The memoirs this movie are based on are powerful and very well written, and I would recommend them to everyone who wants to learn more about addiction and what addicts and their families go through in both active addiction and the recovery process. Because of how fond I am of Beautiful Boy and Tweak, I had high hopes for this movie. Unfortunately, I felt the movie fell short. It really skimmed over the ugliness and pain of addiction with only glimpses into Nick's using that almost glamorized it a little. Also, to any recovering addicts, this movie has some unnecessarily graphic scenes of shooting up that could be pretty triggering, so be warned, similar to what Mimi said. The movie was rather dull in places, confusing in some, and left a lot unexplained. I get that you can't get a whole novel into a 2-hour movie, but it could have been done better. The acting was phenomenal, and most of the issues were in the screenplay and storytelling. 3 stars. So, it was negative, but it was like, it was interesting, because it's almost like they had more of an issue with, like, the direction and the, like, actual writing, as opposed to just the story itself. But, I don't know. I don't think I agree.
I don't agree with the glamorizing at all.
I don't really either, but I'm curious what you think about that.
The book, I haven't read Beautiful Boy, but I did read Tweak. From my understanding, if my memory serves me right, Tweak is from the perspective, you're basically, you are Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes through every season of his addiction. It's actually a pretty big, hefty, detailed book into the crazy stuff that he got into and the stuff that was even worse than was shown
mm-hmm.
in the movie. And then Beautiful Boy, I think, is from the perspective of David,
yeah.
if I'm not misunderstood. So this was about David's story. Mm-hmm. So I think if they had done more of a tweak-based thing, it would have been way more horrific and like all up in your face. So I think the both books are probably amazing. I loved Tweak. I think this was done purposely to show it was highlighting his dad's story, I think, more than his. So I don't have a problem with that, but I see if you loved both books, you would probably be expecting something even more gritty.
Yeah.
So I mean, I get that, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and I think Because obviously this was more from David's perspective, even though we did get snapshots of things that were from Nick's perspective at certain points in the movie. It was majority all from David's perspective. So I guess that makes sense that if they were expecting a full even split of the two books and then they didn't get it, then, you know, that could cause some people to be like, what are you doing? But I don't think that was, similar to what you said, I don't think that was the point of this specific movie. I think it was more about, like, yeah, the journey that you go on and yes, the things that can happen to you, but more than anything, what it does to the people around you, I think was much more of the purpose. But I do have a positive review. So this is from Austin Murray. Amazing message in this movie. Loved it, coming from a former user. Loved this movie, watched it with my mom after being 8 months clean, and it further reinforced the thought that I can never go back to being a user again. Although I can't be certain I'll never use again, who can be 100% certain about anything, honestly, but this movie was not only entertaining, but sends a message of hope to people who use and to families that have had to go with siblings or sons or daughters in the struggle. To know it's a true story and the strength they had, it warmed my heart to watch the movie. It's on Amazon Video, and I strongly suggest everyone watch it. We also bought both the books and will be reading them. Thank you, Nick Sheff, and your dad for being so amazing. 5 stars. So I thought that was just a very nice, nice and honest, and, you know, a review from someone who can really relate to this. As far as, like, reviews, Timothy Chalamet was nominated for 7 different awards, but the movie didn't win any, like, big awards. Mm. Yeah, so no Oscars, no Golden Globes were won.
Well, this was also in the days, because this was 2018, so, like, the streaming movies hadn't quite started being...
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the award shows, like, being viewed in the same light.
Yeah, definitely true. Well, what do you guys think critically? This is rated on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100.
82%.
I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say a beefy 85.
Okay.
77.
Well, it's definitely Mimi because this has a 68% critically.
Mm.
Yeah. And now the audience score out of 100.
74.
Okay.
I'm going to take a beefy swing and say 76.
You keep saying beefy.
78.
Well, you and John tied that time, because it's a 77. And then IMDb score out of 10.
6.7.
Okay.
6.3.
Okay.
7.9. I'm hoping it's a little better.
Well, you and Samuel actually tie, because it's a 7.3. So, the budget for this movie was $25 million, and it did not make its money back, because obviously this was a streaming movie. And so, in spite of it still being a streaming movie, I think it did get a theatrical release.
Did it?
I'm not positive. You want to look that up really quick? See if it did?
Because
I do have a number here that was like the box office, you know, revenue. But I don't know if that is based on purchases on Amazon, like to watch it, or if it's based on an actual...
No, it was theatrically released.
Yeah. It did not make its money back, unfortunately. Which I'm assuming is just because, honestly, I don't know that it got a whole lot of marketing. Like, the right kind of marketing, or, you know, I couldn't really tell you. Maybe there was just something else really big that came out at the same time. But with the budget being $25 million, box office was $16 million. So it lost it lost out at $9 million, which I was very surprised by. Because you said that Call Me By Your Name came before this? Is that right?
I don't know.
I honestly don't either. I have no clue.
I thought it was Timothy Chalamet's first big, like, out.
Box office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
And with, you know, with their names being on it, I guess I'm just surprised. But, I mean, that almost leads me to believe that maybe it was a marketing issue. Maybe it was that they released it at the same time as something else really big. Because 2018, was that Endgame?
No, that would have been Infinity War.
I mean, that big. So that honestly might explain it, that if they came out with this movie around the same time that Infinity War happened, that would explain a lot as to, you know, why this happened.
Well, yeah, there was a bunch of big box office movies during 2018.
Like what?
Infinity War, you got Ready Player One, Deadpool was dropping. That was a lot of Marvel's biggest, you had Venom come out at that point as well.
Yeah. So honestly, it probably just couldn't compete with all of that going on at the same time.
Boy Erased came out too. It was just a crowded year for movies, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that explains it. I pulled just like a few kind of little like trivia facts about the movie. So the real Nick Sheff stated in a Q&A that the drawing book that Steve Carell in the movie finds of his son's addiction struggles was drawn by Nick's real life half brother, Jasper Sheff. The real Jasper is the one that that drew all of that, which I thought was really cool. Timothée Chalamet lost 18 pounds for his role as Nick Sheff. He also had a consultant and a doctor on set to ensure that his acting as a drug addict was realistic and authentic, which I really appreciate.
He definitely had that super skinny look going.
I mean, you saw it on the bike.
Yeah.
In the bike scene, I was like, you're gonna just fade away. Like, he was so small, and I was just like, oh my god, like, this kid.
Little man. Mm-hmm.
So small.
And the bike scene was really good. I'm glad they showed that, because him and his sponsor, like, a lot of people when they come off of drugs, they try to get some sort of high from, they become adrenaline junkies, so, you know, working out until you feel that high, that adrenaline, that was a perfect little just throw in of like, people get addicted to something else that is just like healthy or socially acceptable. That was a good throw in.
Yeah. Well, one of the scenes with Jack Dylan Grazer and Steve Carell was shot at a school behind a hill with a bunch of sheep living on it. And while filming, the sheep interrupted the shot by making noises and bleeding for approximately 30 minutes. So they just had to stop and wait for the sheep to get quiet. But to be honest, everything else was just talking about, you know, where the other actors have, like, acted before or, like, things like that. So I didn't have, like, a whole lot of other kind of, like, interesting things. Those were the best things that I could find just for this movie. I almost started reading the next one, but it's a Lord of the Rings fun fact from last time. So do we want for this one to do the recast? I feel weird about that with this being a true story. I'm curious what y'all think.
I'm fine with it.
I don't find it particularly weird.
If y'all don't find it weird, we can do it. I didn't want to suggest it and then everybody be like, let's not, you know, like for this one.
I mean, it's just like casting for any other, you know, movie based off of true events or based off a true story. I mean, Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet got cast in this for a reason, you know. They didn't want it to be... I'm going off the rails here, but...
I was just going to let you keep going, talking about the reasons why.
Talking myself into a hole. Oh, my goodness. Full circle.
Well, then who do we think that each other would play? And we can also use our other, you know, banner box regulars for things as well.
I have Tyler as Steve Carell.
I can see that.
I think I have you as, what's her name, Vicky?
Oh,
Nick's mom.
So
not
real
stepmom. Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because Karen, I believe, is
Karen is the stepmom. Stepmom. I'm fascinated by that, but okay. Colton is Spencer.
Yeah.
think he's Spencer.
okay. I don't know.
What?
This is funny. This is a hard one.
Yeah, this is very, like, difficult to pin down.
Because there's such specific characters.
Yeah, it's not super obvious. Thinking.
There's also not a ton of characters.
Yeah, there's not very many.
Not really.
So.
Because we have stepmom, we have his biological mom. We have his dad.
Half siblings.
Then we have.
I would put. I think I would put Mimi as Karen.
Here I am.
Because Karen, like. She,
Karen.
Well, Karen is very, you know, she's very caring and she wants to be there and, you know, and help Nick at the beginning, but she also has the wherewithal to know when to stop. Yeah.
Oh, the driving car scene of her chasing him.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's the one that got me this time where I was like, keep it together, because it's, I've done a lot of the things in that movie, but I've driven around looking for people. I've also had friends that were addicts, and some of them made it, some of them didn't. And then also like driving after, I've literally done that. And so I was just like, oh, it's so true. Cause like, it's that perfect picture of like, you're chasing them because you love them and you want the best for them. And they are flying.
Yes.
Away from you. And so, it's just as you can see. I want to say Colton as Nick, but maybe it's just because it's association of like, you know, he's a tall, skinny guy with like brown, like short brown hair and like, but he's never done drugs. So I kind of like, I guess he could, like, kind of pretend that he knows what it's like. So, I feel like I almost want to put somebody that I'm like, okay, yeah, they probably, like, know the feel. But.
Yeah. I have John as the doctor.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I figured it was that or David. That doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, it seems like, I don't know what Timothy Chalamet's life has been like, if he has ever, like, experimented with any of these, you know, with any of these drugs or anything. I don't know. And so, I don't know if he is just pulling from, like, reference, and he's just really good at that, or if he has actually experienced this, and so it's not too hard to tap into. I really don't know. So I'd be curious to, like, potentially watch an interview and just see what he says about it. But I also know that it is not impossible to put on a performance like this without having prior knowledge. And for that reason, I think I'm going to put Samuel as Nick. Because I think...
The most sober boy of them
all. I know, the most sober boy of them all. But you've even said yourself that you have a, like, you know... That the reason that you're, like, completely sober is because you know yourself very well. And you know that you have, you know, an obsessive personality. And if you were to, like, try any of those things, there is a chance that you wouldn't let go of it. And so, like, for that reason alone, that's why I'd put you at Nick.
Okay, don't make this weird. But I feel like I would actually cast you as Nick.
Really?
Yeah, I'll cast you as Nick. And then I would cast Samuel as David. And I was like, I was like, this is a kink I was not trying to go down.
No!
But,
oh, boy.
I mean, I'm honored, first off, because, you know, it's an important role, and it's a hard role, too. But that's the fascinating thing about this cast, is I feel like it could go so many different ways with our, with our group.
With our ensemble.
People, yeah.
And styles of acting, you could very much go various ways with different people.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd cast Sam Marie as his biological mom.
And that's what I thought. I definitely thought Vicky would be a good fit for her. Yeah, I think that's as, honestly, I think that's as good as we can get it. Just because this one's a really hard one.
It is.
Yeah, it's a really hard one to cast. Favorite and least favorite moments from this one?
I already mentioned the car scene where his stepmom's chasing him. Mm-hmm. So I won't say that one, although that had a lot of high emotional impact the second time watching it. I'd probably say, honestly, it'll probably be a lot of people's favorite scenes. The one specifically from the side of Nick, where he's on the phone and he's calling his dad because he knows dad always comes to save my booty out here. And, like, I'm out here and I'm high and, you know, the girl that just literally he brought back to life because she OD'd, and she, you know, she's like, come to the hospital with me, and he's like, yeah, I will. We all know he's not. And so that whole moment of like, everything's crashing down, he's at rock bottom, calls dad, who's the savior, and every time, and that's the one time his dad tells him no. And from his side of, he's like, when he says, I think just being home and you guys are going to help me stay clean. And, you know, like just the, it's perfect because when they're, you have to let people hit rock bottom, unfortunately. And everyone's rock bottom looks different, but I just thought it was perfect. So that moment from his side specifically, obviously Steve Carell, that was like, that's a, you know, everyone kind of, I was like, keep it together. For Steve, you know, just like just the crying, the whole thing. But yeah, that phone call. But I'll say specifically from Nick's perspective.
So I'm going to go opposite in terms of my least favorite and my favorite are, I was planning on saying this already, but the back-to-back moments of my least favorite moment of the film is Lauren ODing and everything around that, everything with her wanting him so badly. And him just being like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then the phone call scene, but specifically from David's perspective.
Yeah.
Because how I took it was David realizing, and it had been a couple of scenes leading up to this with the two characters who I think we've discussed least, which is his other two kids.
Yeah, Jasper and Daisy.
And the several scenes leading up to this where it became very clear, you know, like even at the swim meet and all, that David was so focused in on Nick that he was starting to lose sight of the others.
Yeah.
And so when he's having that phone call and he looks up the hill and he looks at his other two kids and he's like, no. Because how I took that was that, yes, part of it might have been realizing that Nick has to do it on his own. I took it less as that and more of David realizing that whether Nick does it on his own or not, David has to take care of the people who he needs to take care of.
Well, and not to mention, this was like one of the first times that Nick had called him since he broke into his house.
Yeah.
When David now has to realize that his son was willing to steal from them for this and miss the swim meet to come and steal when he knew they wouldn't be there. And specifically, like, chose to do that and then just ran away instead of, like, you know, instead of staying to talk or anything like that. And, you know, and that's also, like, a safety concern for, because there was a girl with him that they don't know who just broke into their house and is clearly also an addict. So I think that was also part of it, is that not only is he losing sight of his other kids, but he's also concerned for their safety. If Nick is willing to just bring a stranger into their house while they're not there, let her go through all the stuff, and it's him being like, no, like,
also, you're cut off. He was getting out of the denial. I feel like every parent, spouse, anybody in that person's life, you have this denial of, well, it's just the addiction talking, or it's just like, it's the addiction. You are like, oh, well, they're high, and this is what it does to their brain and whatever. And then when you start getting to the points of, like, they're stealing from you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing these things that constantly put that back in your face of, like, no, it's not just that. They're also lying to you. Mm-hmm. And so when it starts to hit, everybody has that breaking point. And I think his was realizing, like, oh, he's straight up lying and stealing from me, and he's stealing my time and my life. Because literally your entire life becomes about that person's use. And I think everybody just has that point where they're like, it ends here kind of thing. So yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
So good.
John?
We've said it, but I'm not going to change my answer. This is a scene where Steve Carell decided to rip my heart out and stamp on it and stab with a knife. I don't care. That scene with Dave broke me. It hurt. It hurt real bad. Because that's a man truly, like, he's fighting himself. Every ounce of him is fighting to sit there and go, yes, come back. But he's doing it ultimately not only for the betterment of his son, but for the betterment of his two kids that he's currently trying to raise. And again, I caught the whole Jasper and Daisy bit with, like, because you could see him, like, apologizing to the kids. He's like, he's sitting there and he's really coping with, like, he's missing the achievements in the same, by focusing on Nick so much, he's missing the achievements that his kids are currently making. So now, not only is, because we get the contrast between, I believe it's the recital versus the swim meet. The recital, we get David fully focused on, you know, probably like, where's Nick, what's Nick doing, like, what's he up to? And so, and that's stealing from Jasper and Daisy, because now two people are currently not present in the moment of this great thing these kids are doing.
Yep.
And so that's why you kind of see him, like, you know, at first you see him going down that path, and then you see him, like, actually start to follow, I think it's Jasper swim meet. I believe who swim meet is.
Yeah, it's
Jasper. You see him start to follow and start clapping for Jasper, and then, like, you see him go outside for a second, like, really have to deal while Nick's having to, like, deal with the letter. It's a man truly, like, it's either he wants to help his son so bad, but he knows that no matter which route he goes about it, it's not going to help him any more than it already is, and he has something he needs to focus on right then and now, which is why you see him later tell Vicky, you know, like, look, I've given this kid all I have already. I can't give him any more. It's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching to see Steve Carell. Ah, I'm not going into any further. I'm going to cry.
As Mimi just beams with happiness that she
I texted Mimi at 11 o'clock last night, like, what? Why your movie make me cry? Least favorite movie moment is the shower scene.
Yeah.
If it had led to, like, you know, like, an unsung, like, pregnancy as part of the consequences of, you know, Nick's actions or something like that, that would have made sense to me why this was put in there. But it just seemed out of place to me. It just didn't seem to quite fit the narrative. It didn't seem to serve a narrative purpose other than the fact that it was solidifying
Lauren
and Nick's relationship as a whole. It just didn't seem to narratively fit in my head where that scene particularly went.
So, you know, being the token person who doesn't like sex scenes in movies, I'll actually come to its defense a little bit. I know.
Wow.
I know. A gasp. A hush falls over the room. And Mimi, I'm curious about your thoughts on this. To me, one, I do agree with you that I think it was, one, meant to be, like, kind of solidifying their now kind of bond together in this thing. But also, the whole point, at least from what I understand, and the way that they talk about it in the movie, is that the, you know, what they take is completely changing the world around them to be something vibrant when everything was dull. And so then having another person to explore this thing that is already something that people, you know, put on a pedestal. People put, like, sexual experiences on this big pedestal of, like, you know, I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to have this amazing time. It's going to feel great. And now you add in this, as he describes it, technicolor world where everything is even more intense and more vibrant. And to me, it was like them, you know, being like, well, we're already here, you know, like, yeah, stack onto the experience with something else, you know? And so, like, it made sense. I just was uncomfortable with how long it was. It was a long scene. It was longer than most sex scenes in movies.
But it also wasn't explicit, which was nice.
No, it wasn't too explicit, no. We didn't see any nudity, but, you know, there were enough sounds going on and enough, like, movements that I was like, this is going on for a little while. Like, I could have gotten the gist with, like, 30 seconds. They went on for like a minute and a half to 2 minutes, and I was just like, that's very long for a sex scene in a movie. But I did find, like, purpose in it, so I wasn't, like, bothered by it being in there. But I'm curious about your thoughts, Mimi.
Yes. Okay, so what you said about it just kind of makes, I think they put it in there, and I thought it was really well done, because it just makes everything that much more quote unquote amazing. So it's like there's sex and then there's like high sex. And so, but from the outside perspective, when you're sober and you're watching this, you're like, this is sloppy and just not it, you know? But it's like getting in the water and the water's like, mm-hmm. it's so amazing, this hot water. And they're both just, like, looking like complete dum-dums. Like, and the same thing with him being high out, like, in the college campus.
Yeah.
And his mouth is agape, and he just looks, like, ugly. A mess. And just, yeah, a mess. And, like, but in that moment, you don't care. You know, you're having the best time ever. So it's showing, like, you know, it might be amazing to the person, like, in the moment, but you know that that's probably not the best, healthiest version of that. Mm-hmm. And so you just realize, oh, like, this, it really isn't that great.
Yeah.
But to them in that moment, because they're using, it is.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really well done, just from the perspective of, like, that's probably how it does look from the outside, where you're like, this really isn't all that great. But in the moment, they're like, this is awesome, you know? So, yeah, I think that was, yeah, they probably could have faded to black a little
sooner. It was very long, and I was sitting there like, wow, they're still going. All right, we're keeping on.
We're on the other side of the shower now.
Yeah, okay. I know. Like, when they moved, I was like, oh, they're going to cut now.
Nope.
No, still not cutting?
Still in the shower.
Here we go. Like, well, strap in, everybody.
He didn't last long, maybe. That's the whole point.
maybe that was the point, is that they were going to show us beginning, middle, and end, and it was only going to take 2 minutes.
Yeah, a two-minute
oh my
beginning,
goodness.
Middle, and an end.
I mean, that is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. So for me, my least favorite would have to be just seeing that he... the moment that he shows up at their house with Lauren behind him, where I'm like, oh no, now they're together and it's worse. Like that by far was like my, like, not even like when I'm saying least favorite, just my least favorite, like, like, not that it was bad, just like, oh, where like my heart plummeted was in that moment. And then my favorite, I'm not going to copy you guys, but it is that. So I'm going to pick the scene that I said before that I was obsessed with, which was in the restaurant with him badgering his dad for money and the dad just trying to help him by just being there and talking, when Nick absolutely in no way, like, wants that or like, quote unquote, needs that at the moment. Just because it was so well done from both of them. And it's heartbreaking, and I, like, after that scene ended, I remember just thinking, like, sitting back and just being like, wow, like, that was an incredible scene. So if it's not gonna be the phone call, because I don't want all of ours to be the phone call, it's gonna be that scene. So, out of, oh gosh, out of 10 90s bands, what would you, because that's when this was placed, was like end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s. What would you guys rate Beautiful Boy?
We've had too many of them lately. Might have to be a 10 out of 10. I can't really name anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's not a movie I'm going to be like, ooh, let's put on some popcorn and watch Beautiful Boy.
But like our artistic, like.
From an artistic standpoint, I think it's. Out of 10.
What about y'all?
I'm going to give it, I think I'm also going to give it a 10 out of 10, because, I mean, it's not despite whatever the reviews say, the storyline is very well put out. You know where you're at for the most part of the movie. I'm not really questioning, like, you know, there's no, like, lingering on certain things that I'm going to be lingered on. It's very concise. I love the cinematography in it. Is actually, I don't think, talked about enough. Yeah. To be told, I'm really impressed. I would love to go back and watch it and, like, really look at the lyrics or the songs.
Oh, for each the individual, soundtrack, yeah.
The soundtrack. Because they seemed very intentionally placed.
Oh, for
and
sure.
And I'd love to go back and actually see what the lyrics are saying and try and sit there and see why that song was put in that exact moment. But that's just my personal opinion on that. But overall... It's a 10 out of 10, and I'm not going to lie, the ending almost bamboozled me. With David and Karen showing up to the AA meeting without Nick, and Lady talking about how she lost her, I'm going to say Bryson, I think his name was Bryson. No,
she lost her daughter.
It was somebody important. It basically was signifying the fact that she had, like, lost somebody to overdosing.
Yes.
just as we're sitting there, and just, you know, casually cutting to Nick passing out in the bathroom. And I'm like, don't you dare. Don't you bloody do it to me. This is not okay. I don't need this right now.
I was very scared in that moment because everyone had always said this movie is super sad. And I was like, all right, so this is what's going to happen. And then it gets you.
It does. Because then you cut to the scene with Vicky and David in the hospice.
And hospice?
Hospital, whatever. I don't know words. I'm sad. Talking sad movie, I ain't thinking. But no, it's a 10 out of 10. I have to. Like Samuel said, I'm not going to sit there and go out of the way and be like, you know, we should totally watch this again. Like, you know, it's not a popcorn flick. It's definitely a movie where it succeeds. I've always said that movies succeed in either an entertainment value aspect or they succeed on an artistic level. And if you're Dr. Doolittle, you do neither. But anyway.
The ultimate failure of the podcast.
The ultimate failure. I think the only one to get a zero, I think.
Yeah, it got several zeros.
No, 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
Mimi?
Banger.
I mean, y'all already know it's a 10 out of 10. But, or else I would have suggested it. But I would say that I guess it is a very niche movie. I feel like to appreciate it to its full capacity. If you have known anyone with addiction or you yourself, I think it hits in a whole other level. But, which I'll have to ask Samuel what he thinks about this. I think it's valuable that if you haven't had an experience with someone or you yourself, I think it's just a really good window into the world of that. So because you're Sober Sally, do you feel like it would be good for people that have, like, no idea what that world's like to, like, kind of, like, just peek behind the curtain of, like, oh, that's scary. Put that away. yeah. So
100%. Yes.
I would absolutely agree. And I'm also going to agree with all of you. I think this is a 10 out of 10 for sure. I loved it. I couldn't think of anything that would have taken it down, even, like, a couple of, you know, a couple little points. But yeah, I absolutely think that this is a really great movie for both, like you said, people that have gone through this and people who haven't. Because, and kind of like John touched on at the beginning of the episode, it doesn't, you know, while obviously the overarching subject matter is, you know, drug abuse and addiction and things like that, there are lots of other themes explored, you know, and even being someone, because I also know nothing about this world, you know, being someone who has never been a part of this world or been exposed to it before, I think I still got a lot from it. And, you know, like you said, got a good kind of window into what it's like to have to go through it, whether you're in David's shoes or in Nick's shoes. But yeah, I absolutely think this is a 10 out of 10 for sure. Does anyone have any final thoughts before we get out of here? Oh, we should pull our next one.
Yeah, I mean, our next movie is Two Towers.
But well, yeah, but I'm talking about the one after that, yeah.
The next one.
Mimi, do you want to pull it?
I want to pull it. Pull it.
Pull it real good.
I don't think that does anything.
We're gonna get caught.
All right.
So, I don't know how to open it.
Yeah, you just pull it off. Okay. There you go. And then just don't look in. Just reach your hand in and pick one.
All right. Which one feels like it's been folded by me?
Two Mimi hits in a row.
Just kidding.
All right, what we got?
Dead Poets Society.
Yes!
Oh my goodness.
Yes!
That movie is so good.
Finally. Oh, let's go more sad movies! Yeah. Woo!
Tyler's not allowed to skip this one.
No, Tyler will not be skipping this one. Yeah, I think that was Russell's who put. Or was,
no,
wait, that was
it
you?
Was me. It was
oh,
me.
I just know Russell also loves that movie, so I thought he might
it's
have been the one to put
good.
It in.
No, Thank you for putting that in there. It's very good.
We all agreed that that would be, since I'm a big Robin Williams nerd, that would be one of my.
Oh, there's so many good scenes.
Next picks. I think Russell put in, for his Robin Williams pick, I think he put in Birdcage.
Oh, I have not seen that one. But yeah, so if unless anyone has any final thoughts. All right, we will get on out of here. Just a reminder, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artist Entertainment and on Twitter at @artist_mad. You can leave a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out a lot. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that you would like us to review in the future, you can DM our social media or email us at bannerbox.madartists and at gmail.com.
Mimi, hit the plug.
Yes. Plug yourself, Mimi.
Yes. Hello. So What Your Mimi Never Told You podcast is only on Spotify. You can listen to my beautiful voice and all the people I interview, which is all the mad artists pretty much. I just released Russell's episode.
Just listen to it today.
And enjoy. You're welcome.
All right, we will see you guys next week where we'll be doing Two Towers first. And then we will be doing Dead Poets Society. So we will see y'all next time. Bye-bye.